Class war, class war.
Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
My attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your money when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When the system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Vibert Deese, and welcome to another episode of the Class War Battlefield Podcast. Are you in denial about the coming crises? About peak oil, peak resources, peak just about everything? Richard Heinberg has it right. So doesn't, I think his name's William Kunstler, but he does the Kunstler cast. C-A-S-T-E. They have it right. Charles Einstein, or Eisenstein has it right. Carolyn Baker has it right. You know, I'm just now really starting to dive into these people and get to know them. But they have it right. Andrew Harvey has it right. Gary Knoll has it right. Michael C. Rupert has it right. We are facing such a dramatic crisis in this world, in this country, that I believe most people are just so overwhelmed by how bad it's feeling that they're in denial. You know, it's like having a beloved parent or grandparent who, right in front of your eyes, is becoming sick. And then things get a little better, but then he or she continues to degrade right in front of your eyes. Now, you're well old enough to understand death. Let's say you're in your teens. You understand death. You know what death is. But this parent has always been strong. And they've always been the one to correct you or to put up with you when you were really out of line. And you never really said thank you enough or I love you enough. But here they are, right in front of you, growing weaker and weaker and weaker. And you're in denial. You know it's getting bad. But you can't say it. You cannot admit to yourself that they might die, let alone that they will die. Until one day, you come home. And you are told that you have to go to the hospital. Because that parent has now become so bad that they have to be hospitalized. Or maybe you don't even get that type of a warning. Maybe one day you're tending to your life and your cell phone rings. And you go to answer it, and that feeling that we all know, because we've all had it, runs through you right before you hit that send, right before you answer it, and say hello. That feeling that you know your life is about to change forever. It's like that. You're in denial until the change comes. Because as soon as you hit that send, as soon as you listen to that voice, and as soon as you hear, you have to get home, they just rushed that parent to the hospital. It didn't look good. Suddenly, you who've never gone to church, or maybe didn't go to church specifically, suddenly you were begging to be the first one in the caravan to talk to God. You were saying every prayer that you could remember. You suddenly understood the Bible better than anybody who studied it for 50 years. Because you needed things to change. That's called grief. Deliriousness. And most of us, we're in that. I don't pretend that I'm not in that same boat with you. It has taken the better part of 3 years, probably 4, to be honest, for me to actually see things unraveling the way that they are. It has taken me the better part of a year, about a year, year and a half, for me to actually understand how bad things are getting. And as I sit here producing this podcast, I think to myself, why is it this way? Well, if you're suffering from grief, you go from denial and then bargaining, then anger. Sometimes you go to anger and then bargaining. I'm kind of in the anger stage. You know, the question of why is it like this is in my mind constantly. And I find myself thinking about this previous generation, about their cluelessness, about the cars that they drive, the gas that they guzzle. I think about the baby boomers. And again, their cluelessness. And I find myself getting angry. I find myself becoming really angry. See, I went through the denial phase. I'm not completely out of it yet, but I went through it. Denial took me about a year and a half. The first thing that clued me into how bad this was getting was a podcast from Are We Listening? And it was from Richard Heinberg and a couple of other people. I happened to find a group of 3 of these podcasts. There's, by the way, Are We Listening is a great podcast. They have a lot of great alternative people on there. But I was listening to this podcast with Richard Heinberg, and he was talking about, I don't know if he was talking specifically about peak oil or peak everything, but he was basically talking about this new reality that we're entering. And I remember this feeling shot through my body. Kind of like I was that person, that teenager, who was living his or her life, ignoring the fact that their parent was getting weaker in front of them, when suddenly I got that phone call. And I went to hit send, but that feeling just rushed through me. Your life is about to change forever. And I didn't want to believe it. I turned away from that podcast. And I don't do that. I'll listen to a podcast 20, 30 times until I understand it. But I understood this, and I ain't want no part of it. I didn't listen to it for a couple months. Then I forced myself to listen to it. Not only once, but about 10 times. Because I wanted to understand why I felt that way and what it was that made me feel that way. In subsequent months, I learned who Richard Heinberg was. And I realized that he, along with other people, you know, the people who I mentioned in the beginning, had been warning of this crisis. You know, Kunstler wrote a book called The Long Emergency, I think it was. I haven't read it yet. I've heard him talk about it. I've read some articles on it. But I have not read the book yet. And this is part of that denial. You know, I'm going to start breaking out of that denial and start really educating myself on this stuff in the coming year. But in learning about Heinberg, I stumbled upon Charles Eisenstein, Sacred Economics. Who also wrote this wonderful, marvelous, great book read by Lynn Gary from Unwelcomed Guests called The Ascent of Humanity. One of the greatest books ever written. Truthfully, get it. Read it. But I realized that these people had been talking about this coming crisis for quite some time. They've been ringing this bell. And the reason why I reacted like this was because this wasn't the reality that I was seeing on TV. This wasn't the reality that I was seeing, or should I say hearing, on all of these great leftist programs that I listened to. They weren't talking about this. You know, they were talking about climate change, which is such a crappy way to say global warming or global destruction, because that's what it is. They were talking about the legal mechanisms of all this stuff. I mean, you know, maybe save for like some of the revolutionary ones like 5 o'clock shadow and stuff, but and Black Agenda Report. But they weren't talking about the fact that civilization was at a crossroads and that we were entering a period where things were going to change dramatically because resources were going to dwindle, especially fresh water. And we weren't preparing for that. And we were not preparing for that. And so, this shattered me. I literally walked around for a week in a daze, kind of in this strange holding pattern. And a friend of mine, a young man actually, he saw me. We worked together. And he goes, "What is wrong with you?" And I couldn't even say it. I said, "You know, man, I'm just, something's going on." And then finally, you know, towards the end of the week, I go, "You ever found something out that just completely upends you?" And he's like, "Yeah, you know, well, we all have those moments." And then I started explaining to him what I was starting to realize. And he goes, "Yeah, that's pretty shocking." And then he just, you know, he's a young man, and he just kind of rolled it over and just kept going. And until I listened to that podcast again and again and again and again, I just kind of carried this and I put it on my back and didn't want to pay attention to it. And then after listening to the podcast again, several times. That's when I broke from the denial and went into the, okay, why is this like this? And then got angry because of the older generation. Do you have the same feeling that I have, that the older generation and the baby boomers and the sub-generation right after them, you know, the baby boomers were right after the war. It was this five-year period. But also, like this, the group of people born in the 50s and probably into the mid-60s, do you get the feeling that they basically said, the hell with it, we're going to take and do it, we're going to take as much as we can, do whatever we want, and, you know, the next generation, whatever. Now, I'm not blaming it all on them. You know, I understand how propaganda works. I understand how police repression works. I understand how the police started really murdering and jailing some of the great, great, great activists and used psychological warfare to break and, I mean, ultimately spiritually break people. I'm not naive enough not to know about that. But for the rest of them, they were on this binge to me, you know? And I think about this. I love music. And I listen to music from the 80s and the 70s. And recently, over the last month or so, I've been getting really angry as I've listened to it. Because in the music, you can feel the carefreeness within some of the lyrics and the tones that were used. And I am just, you can feel the energy that was available for change, true social change during those decades. And I become so angry because the older generation has left a mess. And then they want to beat us up for the fact that we haven't solved it. You know, I'm a little older, so it's weird to me now to not be able to say that I'm part of this, you know, this new generation that's really coming of age now into their early 20s. But I really feel like I have more in common energetically with them than I do with the generation that I was actually born with. I was born in the early 80s. And I feel like I should have been born in the late 80s or early 90s. And when I say late 80s, I'm talking 88, 89, and early 90s, 90, 91, 92. You know, because excuse me, I click more with them than I do with my own group. My own generation, we seem more preoccupied by sparkly, dazzly things, you know, technology and television shows and consumerism. Whereas I've always been one of these people who are like, yeah, that's good, but whatever. You know, there's more important things. And I'm not saying that the whole generation is like that, but also, you know, I've actually done some reading on auras and energy composition, and the new that generation specifically, the late 90s into the early, or the late 80s into the early 90s, they have what's called a lot of, well, they're kind of a composite. They have star qualities, what's the other one? Crystalline. A lot of their energy is crystalline. And crystalline, is kind of this angelic vibrational energy. And it's very high frequency. And it's really, it's connected incredibly to the divine. And it gives a mind that's very rapid, very quick, and a personality, and I use that word very, very loosely because it's more like a soul that's very sensitive to the world. And the reason why is because they're infused with a great deal of empathy, with a great deal of love and compassion. And only through an incredibly strenuous process will that be wrung out of them. And a lot of the ills I see within this generation is from that. Is from the fact that they have been so compressed within themselves that their souls are asking and aching for depression. It's kind of ironic because a lot of these people are on depression medication, and it is my belief that depression medication doesn't actually depress. If you look at the word depress, it means to actually allow it to reinflate. It doesn't do that. It actually does the opposite. It represses. It makes the person feel good without actually addressing the depressive issues. Now, the generation that I was talking about, the older generation, they're the Indigo Kids. Now, they were very, 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 very spiritual. And they also had empathy and also had compassion. Not to the extent that the Crystallines do, but they definitely have it. And how they were so manipulated is because, truthfully, they were, well, a lot of them were just, they were so impressionable that with just a little tweaking, they were able to be hijacked and made into consumer bunnies. So, you know, I have to think about that when I'm condemning, because I understand what happened. I understand what happened. And for that matter, as much as I want to be angry at them, I have to forgive them because a lot of their flaws warrant their problems. But then again, with that being said, I, knowing what I do about the history of the 60s now and the 70s, a lot of them made a conscious decision to turn inward, to abandon spirituality, which is communicable externally, and to go inward and to say, well, you know something, if I'm right, or not if I'm right, like if I'm correct, but if my emotions are well and if my actions are well, then I'm going to, you know, then everything's fine. Well, what they failed to realize is their actions weren't okay. You know, we now have, among the crises, you know, we have a generational crisis now where the scars that were heaped onto the generations all the way back to the start of this republic, and I use that term loosely too, are now heaped on with every single generation, and very few of them have been healed. None of the, very, very little of that energy has been allowed to escape. And the generations are now, you know, while the current generation is now starting to show spiritual fatigue, the generation right now that's working, we're showing immense amounts of spiritual fatigue. Immense amounts of spiritual fatigue. And, you know, that's now starting to drip. Spiritual fatigue in Western civilization is not anything new. Martin Luther King used to quote this Eastern philosopher who spoke about spiritual fatigue manifesting physically. He talked about it in the 1920s. So this isn't new, but it's now starting to result in all kinds of strange psychoses. You know, people aren't meant to do the things that we're doing. You know, we're social beings, and we are constantly being bombarded by propaganda that tells us that we're individualistic. We're social beings. You know, we are used to being in communities, and our communities are fragmenting and dying, and we don't know how to save them. This gets back to the grief. Actually, you know, let me go a little bit beyond the grief right now, because I think there's something that also needs to be said about the emergence of the religious, about the emergence of religious fundamentalism within the Indigo generation, which really was not directly after the war, but I like to think the baby boomers are basically Indigos, even though I have some doubts now. But definitely the 50s and 60s and into the 70s, those were Indigo children. Then we had what's called transitional children from roughly the mid-70s into the mid-80s. And then you had the crystalline children start to pick up. And they went all the way into the millennium, roughly about 2005. And then you have another transitional batch right now that's coming in up until about 2015. Then you're going to get mostly star children. But and by the way, if you want to know a little bit more about this stuff, there's a good book out there called Children of Now. Go ahead and read that. Christian fundamentalism. The reason why it's rising so fast in this generation, and it is taking root so much, you know, other than the fact that communities are dying, things like that, it is my belief that this generation knows that they dropped the ball. That what they were supposed to accomplish was not accomplished. And as Tupac used to say, everybody hates the youth because the truth looks strange. And as they see the problems in the youth and how powerless they are to solve them, they are realizing, at least at a soul level, that these problems are caused by their inaction. These problems are caused by their inaction. And in order to punish themselves, or maybe not even punish themselves, maybe it's more about trying to place internal boundaries and constrictions on themselves in a way that impacts their children too, if that makes sense, they accept this dogmatic religious fundamentalism, which allows themselves, first and foremost, to accept a God that sanctions everything wrong that they've done, the selfishness, the greed, you know, the gluttony. It basically sanctions everything that they've done wrong because it's the God of consumerism. Secondly, it allows them to condemn the sensitivity of this new generation, and basically put the new generation into the same constraint that the old generation was in, heaping upon them all of this scorn for accepting homosexuality, for protesting against consumerism, for protesting against capitalism, basically protesting against everything that the parents stood for, betraying the soul, basically doing all of that. They want to punish them for it. And then thirdly, it allows them to give up responsibility for changing the world to the God representative who is at the heart of their big, big, huge community pastor plantation type organization. Now, I understand hopelessness, and I understand the things that can break down a person's soul. But these three things, you know, I've talked to fundamentalists. And the strange thing about all of them is they don't have the ability to truthfully reflect upon themselves. Religious fundamentalism is really a narcissistic entity. And so, if you're going to deal with it, you got to deal with it like a narcissist, you know? And you got to basically wean the people off who are part of it. And that's shameful to say, but it is what it is, right? So, this, by the way, this creates an interesting, weird web of shame for the new generation, which has really put them in a bind between acting out empathetically and compassionately and all of the and lovingly and all of these higher principles that they've been instilled with, and still remaining true to their parents and remaining true to the society which they do love. So, you know, that's my little bit on religious fundamentalism. Grief, you know, so actually I can take the religious fundamentalism and move to grief, because at the heart of it, at the heart of religious fundamentalism is a denial of reality. If you look at, you know, these people believe that America's, you know, especially Christian fundamentalists, we don't like to talk about, you know, radical Christians in that way, but these people are really, they're dangerous in the way that they don't appreciate reality. You know, reality is climate change is happening. Global warming is happening, yet they deny it. They believe that if we were to outlaw and ban homosexuality, if we were to outlaw and ban abortions, God's judgment upon the nation would change dramatically overnight. However, we should not worry about the impoverished or the system that creates poverty. We should not worry about building bridges between faiths. It's all about demonization and demonizing the other. Narcissism. The reality, the inability to see reality, though, doesn't stop them from constantly, as I like how Chris Hedges says, retreating from reality. Because look, the crises that I began talking about, they can ignore it all they want. But the reality is, you can't say that things are not happening. There's a drought going on in the West that is the worst it's been in 1,000 years. It might be permanent. Because of GMOs, there are places that you can't even plant things anymore. Think about that. Places you can't even plant things anymore. Because of GMOs. You ain't finding that on the news, are you? These people who like war so much do not want to see the pictures of the dead children or people printed in the newspaper, because it might have a negative impact on the war effort. And yet, you know, they don't believe you should make bridges between the faiths, but if you keep going to war with one faith, you know, and they believe, so many of them believe that Islam just needs to be wiped off, you know. Sooner or later, there's going to be blowback, and it's going to be big and bad. So, you know, we have a generation who could do a lot to save this, but they've been handicapped, right? That's the newer generation. Then we have a generation who's in denial. That's the older generation. And then you got the people, the charlatans, the real charlatans, not the ones who are like, you know, just screaming for the heck of it. But the ones who are actually saying, guys, we might want to do something about this because things are about to get bad. And the majority of us don't know who they are because they're not on TV. How many of you know the names that I mentioned at the beginning of this? Again, a year and a half ago, I didn't know who any of these people were. It's like John Taylor Gatto, by the way. That's another good man to look up. but he's not really one of these guys who talk about the crises. But it's imperative that we start breaking through the illusion. You know, I was saying to a friend a couple of weeks ago, he asked me, he said, what do you consider yourself, you know, politically? And I said, well, you know, I used to be a socialist, and I was proud to be a socialist, and I like a lot of things that socialists stand up for. But I'm increasingly seeing that politics just, it's a mechanism to keep the elite in power. The elite use politics to fool the masses. You use politics to structure things in a way that appears to give over more power to the masses, but in reality, usually awards more power to the already powerful. So that's what politics is, and I told him that. I said, so I really don't consider myself anything political. Anything political. I am for democracy. I'm always for democracy. And I don't consider myself a Democrat because Democrats are, you don't call democracy democracy, do you? Doesn't sound right. So I am more of a democracist. You know, I believe in democratic or democratic values. And that is power to the people, for the people, and by the people. And the people are not narrowly defined as these people, these rich individuals who just want to rule over everything. They're killing the planet. And him and I had a little discussion about why, you know, I consider myself a democracist instead of a Democrat. And then, you know, kind of, we faded away. We were working at the time, so we had to go back and do our thing. But now as I'm sitting here, you know, and I'm looking at the crises that's unfolding. I mean, the economic crises, may I say, may I just point out, Wall Street's doing everything that they were doing before the crash. Last year, the end of last year, Chris Hedges spoke with Jeremiah Wright at the Lannan Foundation. Get it. It's a brilliant hour and 41-minute just speech and in conversation. It'll blow your mind. And he made the mention of the fact that our Federal Reserve just did another quantitative easing, which is just printing money and giving it to the rich people. $40 billion. I don't remember hearing anything about it. But they've been doing this, and I've been listening to the London School of Economic podcasts, and they've been doing it all over the world. These central banks have just been printing and printing and printing money. So there's an economic catastrophe coming again, and this time when it hits, I fear to think how big it's going to be, because it's probably going to be bad. So we're not doing anything about that. That's setting itself up. How do you avoid that, right? Well, first and foremost, you do have to get educated. You have to let yourself grieve over the fact that civilization as we know it is going to die. You know, it's funny. We do not say that the Native Americans were civilized. We don't say that they had civilizations. Yet you almost wonder if they actually did have civilizations, and what we have is some deformity that we call civilization. Because as people point out, Jared Diamond points it out beautifully in his book, Collapse. Civilizations die. All of them. Not one of them have survived. They all die. There is a flaw in every single civilization. And so maybe we need to stop creating civilizations. And we need to start creating societies. You know? So how do you avoid the economic catastrophe? Well, some people think local currencies. I'm a believer in local currencies. I'm learning how they work. I think they're really good. But I also think that within the next 10 years, you're going to see a lot of places just go to gifts. And doing cooperatives that enable people to live and work and help each other. You know, free housing, free land, all of that. Because things are getting that bad. The environmental crisis, I was just, I was listening to a podcast about that. And there's 12 tipping points. And actually, this was Chris Hedges, too. Which, you know, these 12 all go, humanity is going to be extinct. I mean, it's just what it is. We've already crossed 4 of them. So, I mean, we're not going to reverse the damage any, you know, in any near generation. You know, it could take 1,000+ years to actually recalibrate the planet the way it should be. For human life. Could take 10,000 years. You know, we've really done a number to it. So we're not going to really solve that, but we can make the transition better. You know, Australia and Dubai have been building huge desalinization plants. In America, we haven't. Now, desalinization plants are important. Why? Because they take the salt out of the seawater and create loads of fresh water. Now, let's think about this. Let's say instead of building a pipeline over land, that'll bring tar sands. Which, my God, do we need to talk about how pollutant those things are? That'll bring tar sands from Canada to Texas. Instead of doing that, what if we built huge desalinization plants and huge networks of pipes that take that desalinized water from the coast? You know, I would even suggest you build a couple of man-made islands on the coast, and then you build a couple of big desalinization plants, and then you pump that water from California into, you know, some of these states that are hardest hit with drought. You can grow food. You can keep people, you know, liquefied. I mean, think about that. That would make sense, wouldn't it? You take $50-60 billion and you do that. We're not doing that. We're not doing that. And I wonder if that's because rich people don't care that much. You know, as long as they live, they care. You know, as long as they have some servants, they care. The rest of us, we're expendable now because we've done the work that they wanted us to. And now, hey, we can all go and die. We have an energy crisis coming up. A huge energy crisis. And we can actually avert this. We have the technology. Excuse me, I was talking to a friend about this who, another one of these people who are living in a fantastic land. He just doesn't see reality. We have the technology, everything from perpetual motion machines to solar cells to, I don't like hydrogen cells that much, but whatever, we do have them, to windmills. And we don't need huge windmills. We can use small windmills with batteries and perpetual motion machines to multiply the energy. We can do that. But we're not doing that. We are not doing that. And then, you know, we are just facing so many problems with trash and resources and... What do we do with some of this stuff? I mean, we should have been recycling since World War II. We had immense recycling during World War II. We should have kept doing that, and we didn't. So now, I mean, it's funny, I wanted to end this with a hopeful note, and I offered some suggestions. But, you know, ultimately, what do we do? And this is where the grief delirium comes in, you know. You feel powerless. And I understand that, because when I start to really think about this stuff, I feel powerless too. Recently, though, and when I say recently, I mean in the last couple of days, I discovered a man who I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, named Andrew Harvey. And he's been talking about getting prepared for the coming crises. I also, a week and a half ago, learned and listened to a great interview from Are We Listening with Carolyn Baker. And I subsequently listened to another interview with Carolyn Baker, which was also equally as good, that could be found on YouTube. And both of them are advocating something that I've been doing myself, but I now extend to you. Develop a spiritual routine. Work on yourself at a soul level. Connect to the divine. Connect to the wonderful, wonderful energy that flows through everything. Connect to it and find your inner strength, because that's the only way you're going to be able to break through the grief and start to deal with the predicament that we're going to be all in. You know, because it's coming quick. I don't know how much longer we have. I think, truthfully feeling, I think that by 2020, we're going to see such dramatic shifts in just society and, you know, the availability of certain supplies, that we're not going to be able to deny it anymore. We're not going to be able to deny it anymore. Okay. I want to thank you for listening. As always, you can contact me at classwarbattlefield@live.com. I don't know when next one of these is going to be posted, but, you know, I'm about to go through a major, major shift in my life change, actually, and I'm moving, and so what my goal is by the summer to start putting these out more regularly again. Hopefully things will be stable enough for me to be able to do that. All right, my friends. I send you sacred love and compassion in hopes that it breaks through the grief, okay? Hopes that it breaks through the grief. Peace. May God bless you. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the gun to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone. And there are lies in the balance. There are people under fire. There are children under care.